Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to see you. Good to have you with us this morning. If you're a little bit newer, we want to welcome you and invite you to take one of the cards from the seat rack in front of you and just fill out as much or as little information on that as you like and drop it in one of the generosity boxes just to help us get to know you a little bit. If you're watching online, there's a link in the chat section that you can do a similar thing. If you're here in the room, there's a QR code that... Hey, Amanda, where'd you go? There you are. Is it correct that they can scan that and it will take them to a digital form? Is that right? And it could be that I have no idea. Yeah, that's right. So there's a QR code on there. You can go do it digitally and all that. So the last two weekends, my family has actually the last three weekends, including this one, my family has traveled. The last two, we went to Huntington University for two very different reasons. Last weekend, we went to a banquet where our son was being awarded athletic academic honors. And as we're walking into the building, we hadn't seen him or anything because they were seated in a separate section and all that. As we're walking into the building, we get a text message from him notifying us that he is one of 15 athletes that had been awarded NAIA Scholar Athlete. So that's a pretty, you could do that. He's actually here somewhere. I think he's downstairs. And he's actually here this weekend for a couple of days on spring break. So then the weekend before, we went up for our daughter, who is going to be attending Huntington University next year, which, had you ever asked me, would my two kids attend the same university? I would say no, because they can't seem to sit in the same room, let alone be at the same university. Well, we went up where she was invited to participate in a scholarship competition, and we received a letter on Thursday notifying us that she has been awarded 2/3 of tuition for each of the next 4 years. Which, if you knew the amount that tuition was, and 2/3 of that over 4 years, works out to be just under $100,000. So... she did really well. She was very comfortable. From what we finished, there were like four or five different levels. And from what we understand, she finished like third overall with everything. So she did really well, and we're excited about that and proud of her. However, there's an interesting dynamic that takes place in our home. I'm sure it's only our home that this dynamic takes place in. It's never occurred in any of yours, so you won't relate. So just understand my story. There's the times where something happens and things are good, you know. Everybody's getting along. Everybody's happy. We're celebrating for Danielle. We're celebrating for David. And then all of a sudden, something happens and there's a change in someone. And this is the person that I refer to in my family as the nasty one, you know. And it's different ones at times. At times it can be nasty dad. Sometimes it can be nasty mom. Sometimes it can be nasty Danielle. Sometimes it can be nasty David. But there's something that happens, and there's this change that takes place. And it's not a change for the better. And maybe you've encountered somebody like this in your own life. Somebody who, after you met them, you had this interaction, you developed this relationship, and then somewhere down the road you went, what happened to them? They're not the same person they were when I met them. You know, maybe they had just put on a good front and was just nasty all the time and you just didn't really realize that. Or maybe something happened that changed their overall well-being and they became more pessimistic or more nasty in some ways. And then sometimes the opposite happens. So sometimes somebody in our family is just grouchy. They're in a bad mood. And then all of a sudden, it's almost like a switch flips. And they're all of a sudden happy and cheery. And I'm like, what happened to you? And maybe you've run into somebody in your life like that, you know, that something happened. And they went from being less joyful to more joyful. They went from making a series of bad decisions to breaking that cycle of bad decisions and getting life on the right track. And you step back and you went, man, what happened to them? They're not the same person I knew for all these years, but that's a good thing. How many have ever experienced either of those types of scenarios. Now, let me ask, for those of you that have experienced that scenario, which one do you prefer? Most of us would say that we prefer the scenario where the transformation is for the good rather than the bad, because most of us would agree that transformation for the good is far better than transformation for the bad. Now, I hope that this isn't a stretch, but in the early church leaders, Paul, to the letter of Romans, he talks about this transformation for the good being better than transformation for the bad. He has spent a lot of time writing about what it means to be made right with God and what it means to live right with God. And doing that, sometimes we step back and say, okay, I get that, but where's more of the personal, practical application? In the part of Paul's letter that we explore together today, this whole letter is chalk with personal, or this whole chapter, again, we have them as chapters, they weren't chapters, it was one big letter and all that. This part of the letter is packed with personal application. It is application after application after application. And so here's what Paul writes to them. He says, therefore, I urge, and therefore, anytime there's a therefore, we have to understand what it's there for. And this is in light of what he wrote in the previous part of his letter about how to be made right with God and live right with God by placing trust in Jesus and doing everything to follow Jesus. He says, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. The word offer here is also means to present. And it's like the way that the Jewish priests would present a sacrifice in the temple. When they would present a sacrifice in the temple, they would place it so that it faced the Holy of Holies, which is where they believed the presence of God rested. So they would literally turn this sacrifice to face the presence of God. It's also the same word that is used when Jesus was presented in the temple to be dedicated to God and all of that. And so this word means to present, and the word holy means to be set apart for God, set apart from a common use to a sacred use. And the word pleasing means acceptance or approved or satisfactory. And so we are presenting our bodies, and the word bodies means our whole self, not just our physical acts, but the whole of the person. And we are presenting this person as holy, set apart for God. We are presenting them as pleased, satisfactory to God. And the word sacrifice literally means a lifestyle of worship. So we are presenting our bodies as living sacrifices, not as the Jewish priests would sacrifice an animal and put them to death to sacrifice them. We are not put to death sacrifices. We are living sacrifices because Jesus was willing to be put to death on our behalf. And then he goes on to say, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. One scholar summed this up in what I thought was a really powerful piece. He said, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its mold. That's, do not conform to the pattern of this world. Don't let the world around you conform you into the pattern of its mold. The word conform means to stop copying, or to don't be in the habit of copying. So don't be in the habit of copying the pattern of the world. Instead, be transformed. The Greek word that is transformed there is where we get the word, the English word metamorphosis, and it means a change from the inside out, a complete and total change from the inside out. Here's the thing. Each and every one of us is going to conform to something or someone. And what we conform to, we will always transform to. We will always change our behaviors, our thoughts, our patterns, our processes to conform to that which we have conformed to. Does that make sense? We transform to what we conform to. And we will all conform to something or someone. When we conform to the patterns of this world, we will likely transform into something that we don't really want to become. When we transform to the pattern of God's thoughts and God's ways, we will transform into the person that God desires us to be based on His will, which is good, pleasing, and perfect. And Paul goes on to say, "For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought." And the word "think" there means to overthink to the point of pride. So he's saying, don't overthink about yourself to the point of pride more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to you. Earlier, Paul had said, in view of God's mercy, which means God is the giver of mercy. Now he says here that we view ourselves in sober judgment in accordance with the faith that God has given. Faith is the inlet of all the other graces and mercies in our lives. When we place our trust in Jesus, it is as if we are opening the door for God's grace to continue to pour out on us. Not that it doesn't without our faith, but you understand what I'm saying, right? Okay? Faith is the inlet. It is when we place our trust in Jesus, it opens the door for God's grace, which is extended, and God's mercy, which is given. And God is the one who gives those things. And then he goes on to say, "For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members..." I saw a meme the other day that said, "My mind thinks I'm 25, my knee thinks I'm 55, and my hip thinks I'm 85. We all have different members of our bodies, different parts of our bodies. But these members do not all have the same function. So in Christ, we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us." Notice that it is grace given to us and gifts given to us. God has given mercy. God has given grace. And in accordance with the grace that He has given, He gives gifts. And He says, if your gift is prophesying, and the word that's prophesying there isn't about mysteriously predicting the future. In both the Old Testament and the New Testament, the idea of prophesying was declaring God's message, which sometimes included judgment, which sometimes included wrath, which sometimes included hope, but sometimes it did sometimes say, if you choose this path, this is what's going to happen. So they would predict the future that was coming, but it was in the context of God's wrath and judgment and God's message. He says, if your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, which serving is taking the heart and the mind, the heart and the mind, not the heart and the mind, of a servant and putting it into action. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, which is about communicating God's message, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. Encouragement is basically helping make someone feel better about life and themselves than they did before they encountered you. I love that. I came up with it, and I love it. And you should write it down, and I may make bumper stickers. Encouragement is helping make someone else feel better about life and themselves than they did before they encountered you. If it is giving, and giving means to be open-handed with generosity, with money and stuff and resources. If your gift is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, which is about someone in a position of authority and influence, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, which is about showing compassion and kindness, do it cheerfully. And the word cheerfully there, the Greek word, is the word that we get our English word hilarity from. So if you are to show mercy, you are supposed to show mercy hilariously. Is that not a cool thing? That I'm going to go around and I'm going to show compassion and kindness to people hilariously. And here's the thing about that. Sometimes when we show compassion and kindness to people who don't deserve it, don't people think around us that it's a joke? Don't sometimes when we show compassion and kindness to people around us who others think don't deserve it, don't they think not only is it is a joke that we would do that, but we are a joke and a fool for doing it? I like the idea of showing mercy to people that makes everybody else laugh. Regardless of why they're laughing, we do it with hilarity because that's the way that God desires for us to do it. And then he says, love must be sincere. There must be no hypocrisy in our love. No false, no fake, no phony. Love must be sincere because it is love from which all the other gifts are driven. Hate what is evil. The word that's used for there, for hate, literally means to abhor or take horror of. When we abhor something or when we are horrified by something, what is our typical response? Our typical response when we are horrified by something is to avoid it, run from it, or hide under the bed from it. If we are horrified by something, we will do everything in our power to not have it affect our life, right? Hate, abhor, make a horror of evil. If we make a horror of evil, we will do everything in our power to not have it have an effect and an impact on our lives. Instead, cling to what is good. Remember the days when you would encounter little, sometimes it was your own, sometimes it was other people's kids. We have two little neighbor kids that are, how old are they? 6 and 3? 3 and 5. They're 3 and 5. And we just love these kids to death. And there's times where they'll be outside playing and we'll go out to do something and one of them will run up and they'll just grab a hold of your leg. And then they won't let go. And, I mean, isn't that the coolest feeling in the world? That back when my kids were normal and not nasty, when I would come home from work and one of them would run up and they would jump into my arms and they would just cling to my neck, that's just the coolest feeling in the world. Now I walk in the door and go, why are you here? we abhor, we make a horror of what is evil, but we cling to what is good. Which is better? To have what is evil clinging to us and holding on to us, or to have that which is good, perfect and pleasing, which is God's will, clinging to it. The word for cling means to glue, cement, or join or fasten firmly together. So that is which is good. We glue and cement to have the effect and the impact on our lives. Be devoted to one another in love. And there's that word love again that comes up, almost as if it's a binding force and a driving force behind what we do. Honor one another above yourselves. To honor means to treat someone with the value that they are worth. But this goes beyond this a little bit because of that word above. It says to honor one another above yourself. And this word above carries the idea of someone going before another person. We've all heard the phrase, this isn't a healthy illustration of this, so just understand that up front. We've all heard the phrase helicopter parents. You guys heard helicopter parents? If you're 107 years old, maybe not. But helicopter parents basically hover over their kids' lives to make sure that their kids are doing what they're supposed to and being treated the way they're supposed to. In this latest generation, there's a transition from something called helicopter parents to lawnmower parents. Guess what lawnmower parents do? They don't hover. They go out in front of their kids and they chop down all the weeds and the obstacles in their way so that their kid has a clear, unimpeded path to where the parent wants them to go. Because who's pushing the lawnmower? The parent. Who's determining where the lawnmower goes? The parent. Which means if they're determining where the lawnmower goes and they're cutting out the path for their kid, where is their kid going? Where the parent wants them to go. And so this is where it's a very unhealthy illustration. But it's that idea of when we honor someone above ourselves, we go out and we cut the path for other people to see and honor them. Not in an unhealthy way like the lawnmower parent, but in a healthy way. It's leading as an example of deference and by showing honor that is due. And then Paul goes on to say, never be lacking in zeal. The phrase lacking in the zeal there means to hesitate or to be slow or pokey. And then it's to be slothful. You ever actually seen a sloth? If you've never seen a sloth, go out on YouTube and search for some video where you can actually watch a sloth in action. They are so slow and methodical and all of that. I think a sloth's mantra in life is summed up in the word later. I will do that later. I will move that branch. I will get that leaf. I will do it later. And when I do, I will do it so slow that you will sit there and wish you could urge me on. And Paul says, don't be slothful in your faith. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. And he says, be joyful in hope. So be joyful, and hope is in what is unseen and uncertain, right? We hope in what is unseen. We hope in what is uncertain. Because if it's seen, we no longer hope for it. If it's certain, we no longer hope for it. We have it when we see it, and we have it when we have it, right? And so if it's seen and certain, we don't have to hope for it because we already have it. But be joyful in what is unseen and uncertain. Be patient in affliction. And the word for patient there means to remain under and not flee. And notice that that word is connected with affliction. To remain under affliction and not flee. And be faithful in prayer. Prayer is simply talking to God. It's communication with God. It's conversation with God. And communication involves two things. It involves talking and it involves listening. And sometimes we master the talking point when we should really master the listening part. Sometimes. And then he goes, share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. The word for the word share there means to make oneself a partner. And when I think of a partnership, whether it's in a relationship or it's in a business, I think of one investing in the well-being and the good of another, because the investment in the good of the other is also an investment in the good of the whole. Share with the Lord's people. Invest in the good of one another, because investing in the good of one another is investing in the good of the whole. Practice hospitality. The word practice there can be literally translated to pursue, as if in a chase or hunt. And so we pursue hospitality. In the first century, in most cultures, hospitality was considered a sacred duty. People would travel, and as they would travel, they would take letters to a host home. And the traveler would show up at the host home, and they would be invited in as a guest because they had the letter of trust that was written by someone else that knew the host home. and they would welcome them in, and they would care for them and meet their needs while they were in that area. And so we pursue, as if it's in a chase, we pursue these opportunities to care for one another. So bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. The do not curse there isn't necessarily just about saying bad things about people or using bad words to people. It's about calling down divine curses on people. Though, just to be clear, that doesn't mean we have permission to say bad things to people and use bad words about people. Bless those who persecute you, and bless and do not curse. The word there means to stop cursing. Stop calling down divine curses on people, which means it's likely is something that was taking place. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. The first full weekend in December, where were we that weekend? Were we in Fort Wayne, or was I in Michigan or Kentucky? Where were we that weekend? I never realized that I was going to become a traveling pastor. I'm headquartered here, but we're going all over the place for bowling and all that. This next Friday, I will be in Smyrna, Tennessee, which is 5 hours from here, to watch my kid bowl in the USBC Nationals. And then I'll be back with you next Sunday to go through Romans chapter 13 together. Anyway, wherever we were the first full week in December, our son David bowled in a Crossroads League tournament for his college. On Friday, I had the privilege of being there. This must have been Fort Wayne, because I was there Friday, and then you were there Saturday. Friday, our son was not much fun to have dinner with, because he didn't bowl well. It was just a rough day overall, and nasty David was fully present at dinner. But on Saturday was a much better day for him. And he was much more fun to have dinner with, because at the end of the day, he had finished fourth overall in the tournament. And I don't know, there are like 120-some bowlers there. But he finished fourth overall. When you took the varsity and the JV squads together and put everybody together, he finished fourth. But on the JV squad part of things, he finished first overall. He was named to the all-tournament team, and he bowled better than every member of the varsity squad of his team. Everyone. Not just the fifth guy that you would compete for time for, every single one. That's a good thing. And he did that at two tournaments this year. So, anyway, as the day unfolded, it became how well he was bowling. One of the things that I will carry with me from that tournament weekend is how genuinely excited and joyful some of the other parents were with us. As they watched David bowl, they would come and they would congratulate us for the three strikes he threw in a row or whatever it was. And then at the end, when he was awarded the tournament championship coaster or whatever it was, they were like super excited for us. They were rejoicing with us as we rejoiced. And it was genuine and it was real and it was so cool. At the same time that weekend, in another section of the team, there was a tremendous amount of conflict and tension and controversy and all of that. And I remember as we rejoiced for David, I remember how much my heart hurt with these other families who were involved in the tension and conflict, had no direct involvement with us or about us or on us or anything like that. But I remember, because, you know, we know these families and we love these kids, and to see this dynamic unfold between them just hurt my heart. And so it's this idea of rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. And then he goes on to say, live in harmony with one another. And the phrase live in harmony there literally means to be of the same mind or think the same thing with respect to one another. So live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. And the phrase do not be conceited there means do not have the habit of thinking better of yourself than everyone else. It doesn't matter whether we're people of high position or people of low position. Each and every one of us has been and continues to be in the position of being a person in need of God's grace. If we cycle all the way back to the beginning of this part of what Paul wrote, he talked about God was the giver of grace. And the reason God is a giver of grace is because we are people who are in need of grace. And because of who God is and recognizing our need for grace, God gives it liberally. God gives it freely, though it costs Jesus everything. And so, whether you are someone of a high position or someone in a low position, you are no more or less in need of God's grace than the person in the other position. And so don't be in the habit of thinking of yourself more highly than you should. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. The idea of do not repay evil for evil. Our tendency is to want to retaliate. Our tendency is to want to seek revenge. But it says, do not repay evil for evil. If it is possible, which means that sometimes it's not possible. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So in other words, if there's a reason that peace is not possible with someone, don't let it be your fault. Don't let it be because of you that you're not living at peace with someone. If peace isn't possible, make it someone else's fault. Do not take revenge. Again, our tendency is to want to take revenge. And it says, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, it is mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. Stoic philosophers believed that revenge wasn't necessary because fate would determine. Jewish philosophers said that revenge wasn't necessary because God, in the end, would take care of it. But how many of us have ever found that sometimes a philosophy like that is much more difficult to practice than it is to preach? Our tendency is to want to seek revenge. God's tendency is to seek vengeance. Vengeance was his just and fair and right. And vengeance is different than revenge. And God will avenge without seeking revenge. God will issue and warrant a just and fair punishment for sin. It is God's alone, not ours. It is a judicial function rather than revenge. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. This burning coals on his head thing is fascinating because there's two or three different directions that this can be approached from. In the ancient culture, you had to keep your home fire burning all the time. If your fire ever went out, you would have to go to a neighbor's home and you would have to get coals from their fire, which you would then carry back to your home on your head to restart your fire. So heaping coals on someone's head would have been considered an act of compassion and kindness. The other is that it was also considered a form of punishment, like in the Egyptian culture, it would be a form of punishment. And in the Jewish culture, heaping coals on someone's heads was illustrative of getting revenge or vengeance on someone for what they had done. Heaping burning coals on someone's head, depending on which angle it is like reigniting the flame in their home. It is compassion and kindness that if it was a form of punishment, the heaping coals thing would generate a sense of remorse or shame or guilt in a person. And so if we want to repay evil for evil, but instead we repay evil for good, it makes this person feel bad for what they did because of our kindness. So then he goes on to say, Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil by good. The phrasing there is to stop being conquered by the evil, but to keep conquering evil with good. And one commentator says that we are to drown the evil with good. To drown the evil with good. Each and every one of us is going to conform to something or to someone. It's just the nature of who we are. And whatever we conform to, we will transform to. The application here of what Paul wrote is that we can either conform to the patterns of the world and likely end up somewhere we never want to be, or we can conform to the pattern of a God whose will is good, pleasing, and perfect. Not just to be made right with God, but to live right with God. Because transformation for the good is always far better than transformation for the bad. How many of you agree? Let me pray for you this morning. Dear God, thank you for the opportunity that we have to dig into this letter, be it quickly and broadly in some ways. But thank you for giving it to us to help us not just be made right with you, but to live right with you. And if we just did the things in this letter through sincere love, how much better we would be at life and how much life would be better for us and all those around us. Thank you for loving us enough. In Jesus' name, amen.
We invite you to stand as we honor the Lord with this last song.
And so, dear brothers and sisters,